Ms. Takeda, Mr. Landau.
May it please the Court. This appeal presents the question whether Abbott must go over to Japan to litigate its Delaware law fiduciary duty claim against Takeda.
Yeah, you seem to present that as some kind of hardship and some kind of, you know, going into some savage, lawless land. I don't understand that.
Well, Your Honor, we don't have to say there's a savage, lawless land, Your Honor.
In Japan and so on, and knows all about Japanese law and knew it. I understand your arguments about Japanese law not having a concept of fiduciary duty or something like that.
Well, Your Honor, of course, the first question.
Aware of all that when you negotiate this extraordinarily broad form selection clause, anything related to the agreement. This is certainly related to the agreement.
Well, Your Honor, with all respect, I think that is exactly the threshold question in the case, which is, of course, a matter of contract, what in fact that language means and how it applies to this particular claim.
Agreement, if you have an agreement that gives each of two companies in a joint venture a 50% interest, then it's obvious that there's a deadlock problem and a duty of good faith to avoid the deadlocks, right? So that's clearly related to the agreement, anticipated by the drafters, who are highly sophisticated in this case, so that I don't see any basis for your argument, actually.
Well, Your Honor, with all respect, I think you have to look to Delaware corporate law to decide
question. Where do you go into Delaware law? You start with a joint venture, which is created. It becomes a corporation, obviously, in 1985, and that agreement is the one that sets forth the existence of this venture, what the parent corporations, if you want to call them that, the joint venturers are doing with their joint venture, and puts in various things they're going to do. And there's a forum selection clause. There's also a choice of law clause, by the way, of, as mm-hmm. you know, separate clause. And so it seems to me one first has to ask the question, does this dispute fall under the ambit of this 1985 agreement? So you look at the language of 10.5, and 10.5 tells you, as Judge Posner said, it's a very broad agreement. You could have written a narrow one. You could have said it was only about formation issues. You could have said it was about whatever you wanted to say. But if this is arising from, concerning, or in any way related to, and even if Delaware law somewhere comes into it, the fact is, it's related to this agreement, and in particular, it's also related to the supply clause of the agreement in Article 9.2.
Your Honor, you are absolutely correct that there is an initial Illinois law issue, because there's no question that the contract is governed, the interpretation of the contract is governed by Illinois law. So Illinois law, in the first instance, you look to decide whether or not what the scope of related to this contract is under Illinois law. But at the end of the day, you have to look to the claim we brought, to the substantive claim we brought, which is a Delaware law fiduciary duty claim.
But maybe you don't, though, because you're bringing this claim, and the question is, who is going to adjudicate this claim? If the forum has been allocated by this agreement that relates to your Delaware fiduciary duty claim or anything else, you've agreed to tell the Japanese judges about it.
Well, Your Honor, again, I think the question is, you have this clause, and I agree, we don't dispute that this is a broad clause, but it's ultimately related to this contract. And so the question is the claim that we have brought, which is a Delaware law claim, is that related to this contract?
It's related, because it's exactly the sort of controversy that you'd expect to arise from the 85 agreement.
Well, Your Honor, with all respect,
you wouldn't have any fiduciary duty claim were it not for this 1985 agreement. You wouldn't have any reason to care what the joint venture itself was buying and who they were buying it from and how much they were paying for it and how it related to the allocation of profits under the joint venture.
Your Honor, I think these are exactly the key questions, but with all respect, I disagree with what you just said, because the point is, the Delaware law corporate claims arise independent of the contract and don't require interpretation of the contract.
It's actually like the case we just heard. That is, you know, lawyers are ingenious at recharacterization, redescription, multiplication of grounds, all that stuff. And so, of course, you can always say, yes, it has its it has its source in a statute, sure, but that doesn't mean it isn't related to and envisaged by and, you know, clearly foreseen.
Your Honor,
the source of the law and the claim, I mean, every legal claim arises out of some legal, you know, doctrine or statute or what have you. But it can also, of course, arise out of a transaction. In fact, usually that's, you know, arises out of a transaction, and it arises, and then you combine that source with a source of law, and you have your case. And that's all that's involved here, it seems to me.
Well, Judge Posner, you are absolutely right that you cannot avoid this kind of a claim just by putting a label on a particular claim, and you can't just slap a tort label on the claim and say, aha, guess what? Look how cute we are. We are now bringing a tort claim. And that's basically what the other side is saying that we're doing here. With all respect, if there's anything I can get across this morning, it's that Delaware corporate law is not a creature of contract.
Of course it's not, but you're missing my point. My point is every time you have a suit, you have to base that on some body of law. It could be contract law, could be a statute, could be something else. That doesn't mean that the dispute doesn't arise out of the contract. I mean, that's like arguing that if this was a dispute over the meaning of the contract, you say, well, look, this dispute arises under the contract law of, you know, Illinois or Delaware or something like that, right? That would be true. It arises under some body of law, but also arises out of a transaction.
Well, Your Honor, again, I think whether or not it does relate to turns on Delaware corporate law. In other words, the district court just...
It doesn't. Delaware law doesn't talk about what relates to what relates to what something else.
Your Honor, with all respect, I think the question is, what is necessary to prove a claim under Delaware corporate law?
No, and here, again, what you agreed to in the choice of forum clause is any disputes in any way related to this agreement, that is, related to the joint venture, related to the ownership. Maybe the substantive law won't be Illinois. Maybe it'll be Delaware. Maybe it'll be whatever. Maybe it'll be made up by the Japanese judges. I don't know. But you've agreed that you will bring actions in the Osaka District Court or in the Tokyo District Court, and they will then take it from there. You can tell them to apply Delaware law if you want.
No, you are absolutely right, Your Honor, but I think the point is, before you send it to Japan, you have to make sure that we're within the scope of the forum selection clause.
And what I'm saying is that question is answered by construing the terms in that first sentence of Section 10.5A.
You are right.
Is the Delaware corporate dispute you would like to argue about in any way related to that 1985 agreement, related to, not structured by, not anything? I mean, if this had been a franchise agreement, there would have been some body of franchise law behind it. If it had been anything else, maybe this does have to do with the internal affairs of the corporation, fine. But it doesn't mean that it's not related to the agreement.
Well, Your Honor, again, I think that the key point is that Delaware, in the Parfi case, which is really the key
You're going ahead of yourself here.
Yeah, but that case is very different because that's about arbitration. And arbitrators, you know, have limited competence. They're often not lawyers, and so they you know, they have a narrower scope. And you can see how, well, if there are issues of fiduciary duty or something like that, you might say, well, we don't think the parties really wanted arbitrators to discuss that. They're just supposed to look at, you know, the meaning of a contract. But here we're talking about courts in Japan. And there's no reason to think they're not as, you know, competent as courts in the United States to deal with these issues. So I don't think that part.
Your Honor, I think what that case is important for is not determinations about the competence.
The facts of a case are important, right? There's always a lot of general language in cases, but the significance of the general language often depends on the situation. So if the judges are thinking about arbitration, they say one thing. But if they're thinking about just moving a case from one court system to another, they're thinking in different terms. They're thinking, why not? Why can't the Japanese courts deal with these issues perfectly well?
Well, Your Honor, again, I don't know that we can decide what's in their minds. I think, you know, you certainly look at what they've written, and I think what they've...
Yeah, but you don't pull it out of context. You don't take things out of context. The context in Parfrey was arbitration. That's different from adjudication.
Your Honor, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the point is the parties...
I agree with Judge Wood and me a lot, but somehow it doesn't seem to get us anywhere.
Well, I think, again, the key... Because, again, I think the general principles we can agree on. I think what makes this case unique is that the Delaware... The parties here have a realm of choices, a range of choices that they pick off the shelf. They can pick a joint venture. They can pick an LLC. They picked a corporation, and the duties that they agreed as under Delaware law are non-waivable and cannot be modified by contract. So you don't need to get into Section 9.2. You don't need to get into...
What does that have to do with choice of forum? I'm not aware that the Delaware courts refuse to let anyone else in the world adjudicate issues of Delaware law.
No, it's not that point, Your Honor.
But we're talking about forum. Well, that's what this case is all about. You started out by saying, well, you didn't want to go to Japan, despite the fact that Abbott has a huge subsidiary in Japan and so on.
Well, Your Honor, I think the point is, does the forum selection clause at the end of the day is about claims that relate to the contract. And the question is this Delaware law claim, does it relate to the contract? Well, the point is, what's in the contract is irrelevant to the Delaware law fiduciary duty claim because these duties of loyalty cannot be modified. So if you look at page 21 of their brief, they say, well, you need to look at the contract because you need to decide whether or not the contract has been breached. No, that is simply not correct. As a matter of black letter Delaware law, you do not look to the contract to decide any of these points.
Well, but what if Delaware, just hypothetically, again, I think a court anywhere could decide this, thought that part of the duty of loyalty involved doing what you promised to do for the other side? You know, and maybe under one contract, one party gets 2/3 of the profits and the other party gets 1/3, and under some other contract it's 50-50, and under, you know, different kinds of contributions are very commonly made, actually, to joint ventures, expertise, money, patents, licenses, and so on. How you would even know whether a duty of loyalty had been breached without looking at what the two parties were agreeing to do vis-a-vis each other, I think, is tough to say.
Well, Your Honor, I think that may be true in the context of a limited partnership or an LLC, which are much more creatures
venture.
Of contract.
No difference from tax reasons between incorporated joint ventures and joint ventures that are done by contract.
Sure there is, Your Honor. I think that there are non-delegable and non-waivable duties of loyalty under Delaware law.
You said before that this was about the claims. This forum selection clause doesn't say anything about claims, source of law. It doesn't say in the event of a contract dispute, a breach of contract, anything like that. It's the event of a dispute. Dispute could be anything.
That's correct, Your Honor. But at the end of the day, the dispute has to relate to this contract.
Pardon?
At the end of the day, the dispute has to relate to the contract.
Well, it relates to it. It arises from it, right? If there weren't the agreement, and if it didn't create this split, this deadlock potential, you wouldn't have this fiduciary duty issue.
Your Honor, you certainly, I think this also goes back to a point that Judge Wood made earlier, which is you can't take it so far back to say, well, but for the contract,
no,
there wouldn't
but
be
for.
A...
It's that it creates the situation in which there is a risk of bad faith. So, and then the dispute arises out of that situation.
Well, I guess then the question is, Your Honor,
these forum selection clauses so difficult to interpret, so complicated on your view. It would be very difficult ever to figure out what was within the clause and what wasn't.
Well, with all respect, Your Honor, I don't agree with that because at the end of the day, it's about this contract. It's not about the resulting and not any claim relating to that entity. It's a contract. It's about the contract. And when you have a situation...
This agreement.
Excuse me?
That's related to this agreement. How much broader, if the parties did want this particular dispute to be subject to the clause, what would they have said? Draft a clause broad enough to embrace this dispute?
They could have linked it instead of to the contract, which in some way would require interpretation of the contract, or arguably they could have said related to. And the entity created here, or related to the relationship between the parties. Or I mean, there are many ways you could...
The difference between relationship between the parties and this agreement. The relationship.
Well, Your Honor, again, the relationship between the parties could be governed not only by what's in the contract, so that you'd have to refer in some way to the contract. It would encompass broader points. The point is, again, under Delaware contract law, which is the source of our substantive claim, maybe Parfee is unique in that sense, but Parfee draws a very it limits what it means to be related to. It makes clear that Delaware corporate law
creates these independent duties. Question. There's a puzzle about this form of forum selection clause, where each party, where the forum depends on who sues first. Doesn't that how are those? Is this common? Because you'd think that if you wanted to be in a particular forum, you would maneuver to precipitate the suit by the other party, or jump the gun, file a declaratory judgment action, something like that.
It's a very unusual clause, Your Honor. I've never run across one of these before. You're in the other party's home turf. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the balance.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Landau. Ms. Mashrin?
Good morning, Your Honors. 21 years ago, Abbott and Takeda entered into this contract that we're talking about today. This contract, the supplemental agreement, is the joint venture agreement between the parties that forms the joint venture corporation, TAP. As the panel has noted and as Abbott has agreed, the forum selection clause in this agreement is very broad, and it is a clause that has served the parties well for 21 years. Your Honor, Judge Posner just asked the question, is this a common clause? I have, in my experience, seen other international contracts that use similar clauses, and the intent behind this kind of a clause is as a deterrent to litigation.
Don't the parties worry about strategizing to get your form? In fact, wouldn't they worry that it would lead to premature, that it would actually foment litigation because someone who saw a dispute on the horizon would you know, rush into court to make sure he secured his preferred forum?
Actually, if you rush into court, you end up in the other side's forum under this kind of a clause.
Oh, okay. But then, I'm sorry, then you try to precipitate the litigation by the other side, right?
I've not seen that in my experience, Your Honor. Actually, this is completely outside of the record in this case, but in my experience, it has been an effective deterrent to litigation and tends to make the parties work together. But in any event, it was a clause.
Yeah.
It was a clause that was bargained for. It was proposed by Abbott. It was drafted by Abbott's lawyers, and as the record shows, Abbott had to go to some effort to persuade Takeda that the clause would be enforceable both in United States courts and in Japanese courts. And now that a dispute has arisen, Abbott has engaged in what we would contend is a classic case of artful pleading and has tried to bring a claim which it contends is purely under Delaware corporate law, and therefore Abbott argues that that claim doesn't relate to this agreement. Takeda agrees that the fundamental issue in determining the scope of the clause is one of Illinois law. There is an Illinois choice of law provision in this contract. Under Illinois law, as it's been applied both by the Illinois courts and this court, the question is there any possibility that the claim will require interpretation of the contract? In this case, we submit it absolutely will require interpretation of the contract. The claim absolutely does relate to the contract. The contract is...
If it only required reference, would you have a different case?
I don't know that requiring reference would be fundamentally any different, Your Honor, than...
Well, it is in some areas of the law. It makes a huge difference, such as under the Labor Relations Act, Section 301, a huge difference. And this seems to be a point that is made by your opponent, and it concerned me greatly in preparing for today.
Now
you seem to almost have conceded that you have to interpret the clause.
Interpret or construct the clauses, I think that's right, Your Honor, because there are several provisions of this contract that directly address. In fact, they are the source of the very rights that Abbott is complaining have been breached in this case.
But don't you just have to refer to them? I mean, is there some ambiguity in those clauses that would require their construction?
I think, well, interpretation or construction, depending on whether this court uses the Boatwright test or the test that's been applied in the Seventh Circuit decisions. Yes, I think that it is necessary to apply the contract to interpret or construe the contract in this case. For example, if one looks at Section 9.2, which is the supply provision of the supplemental agreement, the supply provision says that in it says, first of all, that the parties, that the owners of this joint venture have the right to be suppliers to the joint venture.
That's right.
That right is established in the contract. And the contract also says in Section 9.2 that the party, in this case Takeda, who originally offered this pharmaceutical compound to the joint venture, Lansoprazole, has the right to be the first bidder. And Section 9.2 also says that the decision whether to engage Takeda as the bulk supplier or to engage another supplier shall be made on the basis of the economic benefit to TAP, the joint venture corporation.
Seems pretty clear.
Well, I think there will be a serious question in this case as to whether, in fact, there was a competing vendor that had an offer that was in
sure,
the best economic
factual,
interest.
That has nothing to do with the contract standard. It has to do with what the facts show, right?
Well, I think it has to do with how the contract applies to the facts as well. And we submit that under either the Boatwright case or under the standard that this court had set forth in Omron, that this claim clearly relates to that contract. It is the contract that establishes the joint venture between the parties in this case. A joint venture cannot exist except by contract. And 21 years ago, when the parties entered into this contract, that's how they formed the joint venture. This is the joint venture agreement. When the joint venture was converted to a corporation, this agreement became the shareholders' agreement between the parties. So I'd like to speak to Abbott's argument about Delaware corporate law and fiduciary duty.
Isn't that something for the Japanese judges under your theory of this case?
I think it certainly is for the Japanese judges to decide, but I'd like to dispel any notion that there is a rule under Delaware law that a claim for breach of fiduciary duty can never relate to or arise from a contract, which is the core argument that Abbott makes. The Parfi case does not hold that. The Parfi case merely held under the facts presented in that case, which, as Judge Posner pointed out, involved an arbitration clause, not a choice of forum clause that selected another state or another court. The court held in Parfi that an underwriting agreement that had completely closed and had been completely performed by the time the conduct, the dilution of stock value that later occurred, took place, did not relate to the fiduciary duty claims. In Parfi, the court reaffirmed the rule of Delaware contract construction, which I do not submit as the correct rule to apply here because Illinois law applies. But under Delaware law, the question is whether the rights and obligations established in the contract bear on the claims that are asserted in the case, the fiduciary duty claims. In that case, they didn't because the contract had been fully performed and was of limited nature. The court in Parfi specifically said that it was not making the broader holding that a fiduciary duty claim can never relate to a contract. And Parfi specifically cited the Elf Altochem case, which was an earlier Delaware Supreme Court case that held that a shareholders agreement in the LLC context, but I submit that's a difference with a distinction without a difference, that a shareholders agreement did in fact relate to the fiduciary duty claims.
Now that you've taken your detour to the East Coast, let me bring you back to Illinois. What do you see as the difference between the Illinois, if any, between the Illinois standard and the federal standard with respect to the interpretation of a forum selection clause, such as this one?
I don't see any great difference, and this court has held that there is not any great difference between the Illinois standard and the federal standard.
So you are willing to accept their functional equivalents?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Their functional equivalents.
Yes, Your Honor. And I submit it doesn't matter which test is applied in this case, although it's clear that Illinois law applies to the contract.
The directors of Abbott got so angry that they beat up the Takeda directors. Would you still argue that the resulting suit for battery against Abbott arose out of arose was related to the agreement?
I don't think I would, Your Honor. As in the Omron case, when this court held that if someone from McLaurin had tripped on a baby rattle when visiting Omron's premises to inspect its manufacturing, that tort claim probably would not be covered by the forum selection clause, but that's an extreme situation that isn't presented in this case. The claim that is presented in this case is a core claim that relates to the parties' relationship as joint venturers in TAP. They are co-shareholders in TAP. This is the agreement that makes them shareholders. The certificate of incorporation specifically says that the parties' relationship as shareholders, which is the relationship that Abbott argues gives rise to these fiduciary duties, shall be governed by a separate agreement known as the 1985 Supplemental Agreement. There's no dispute that this is the core agreement between the parties forming the joint venture, defining their rights, and clearly the claim of fiduciary duty that has been asserted here arises out of this agreement.
Let me go back to this issue of whether federal or state law applies with respect to the interpretation of the forum selection clause. What, in your view, is the strongest argument that federal law should apply, even though state law would apply to anything else to do with this contract and that diversity?
Well, I don't believe there's any dispute in this jurisdiction, Your Honor, that state law would govern the interpretation of the contract where the contract provides for the governing law, and here Illinois law does govern. There is a dispute which has yet to be decided in this circuit regarding the enforceability of the clause, and I submit with respect to enforceability, it doesn't make any difference whether the court applies Illinois law or federal law, because in either case, Abbott has not made a showing that it would be deprived of its day in court if required to litigate in Japan. Clearly, it can't argue inconvenience of the parties. It agreed, agreed.
And isn't the enforceability question, in a sense, just a forum nonconvenience inquiry?
It's very similar to a forum nonconvenience inquiry. I think the test under the law established both in Illinois under Kalanka and as this court has applied Kalanka and has applied federal law is actually a little bit stricter because, for example, a party seeking to avoid enforcement of a forum selection clause may not argue inconvenience to third parties, which is an issue that is available under a Section 1404 forum nonconvenience transfer motion.
Or Piper Aircraft against Reno. I mean, if it's a foreign court, there's no reason to think that the Japanese courts aren't open for business.
1404 is a false analog in this case. This is the second forum. It's a foreign forum.
Correct. There's not an opportunity for transfer here. One of the chief arguments that Abbott makes about inconvenience is inconvenience to TAP, which, as this court in the Roberts case and as Kalanka held, is not an appropriate issue to be even considered when we're talking about a freely negotiated forum selection clause and avoiding enforcement of that clause as opposed to a motion to transfer. In closing, if the court doesn't have further questions, I would ask that this court affirm the decision of the district court and dismissing Abbott's complaint and enforcing the forum selection clause. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Mashman. Your time expired, Mr. Landau, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Very quickly, I think Judge Ripple really hit the nail on the head in that it's a two-step inquiry here. The first inquiry is, what does Illinois mean under Illinois law when it says related to? And I think that requires some kind of reference or requirement that you interpret the contract.
You agreed that you have to interpret the contract?
Yes, Your Honor. And so I think then you get to the question is, well, does our Delaware fiduciary duty claim require you to interpret the contract? And I think the answer to that is no. And if you don't like the Parfee case or you think that that's distinguishable because of the context, we've got the Omnicare case, which is 818 A2nd 914 at 938, which makes it clear that the Delaware corporate duty of loyalty cannot be waived or modified by contract and thus exists entirely independent of a contract. So essentially, there's no such thing as a contract defense. And with all respect, I don't think one can basically say, well, it's related to because it just seems related to. I think you really have to be very rigorous about that and ask, does a Delaware law claim, fiduciary duty claim of loyalty, actually require any reference whatsoever to the contract? Here, Your Honor, the answer to that question is no.
But this isn't a clause about about interpreting the contract, this foreign selection clause, not about contract interpretation.
Well, Your Honor,
any dispute.
Right, Your Honor.
Tort disputes.
Any dispute, but it still has to be a dispute arising from, concerning, or in any way relating to the contract. So that's why I'm saying, under Illinois law, what does it mean?
It requires interpretation of the agreement.
Well, yes, under Illinois law it does. I think that, with all respect, I think that's the answer that both sides have now given to Judge Ripple's question. What does it mean under Illinois law to relate to? And the Boatwright case and the Omron case say at least arguably requires interpretation of the contract. And our position, Your Honor, is that the Delaware corporate duty of loyalty claim does not even arguably require interpretation of the contract.
So you would say theft of trade secrets doesn't relate to the agreement because that's a tort?
Well, no, you're absolutely not. See, it's not the label you put on it, Your Honor. You look to the substantive theft of trade secrets doctrine in that case, and may, you know, that raises the question.
Doesn't fall under the forum selection clause?
Well, Your Honor,
nothing in this agreement that happens to talk about that, so you don't have to interpret the agreement.
If it doesn't arguably require interpretation of the agreement, then I would say it doesn't fall within the clause. I think it depends upon what the substantive law that your claim is brought under requires.
Again, it seems to me you're ignoring context. I don't believe there is some Illinois rule, which says that a form selection clause must be limited to, you know, contract interpretation. Particular form selection clauses, maybe the standard form selection clause, might, as in the Parfee case, well, not that was form selection, might be the usual, but that doesn't mean that. Why would Illinois care if you wanted to write a broader form selection clause?
The question is, Your Honor, what does it mean under Illinois law when you write a form selection clause that hinges on it being related to a contract? What does that mean to be related to a contract?
The Omron case did not involve that language in the form selection clause, did it?
I think Omron is exactly where this court came out with arguably related to a contract.
What did the form selection clause in Omron say?
I believe, Your Honor, I don't have it directly in front of me. I believe
that's
it was something
critical.
Like arising.
That's critical, right? Well, that's critical.
It depends.
Illinois does not have a policy which says you can only have a form selection clause that requires interpretation of a contract. That would obviously be preposterous. You can have any form selection clause you want. Now, then there's a question of interpretation. What did the form selection clause say?
Right.
Now, if the clause in Omron was identical to this clause, that would help your argument. But it wasn't.
Well, Your Honor, I guess the point is, even at its broadest,
still out of cases which are about specific form selection clauses, some general state policy about the scope of form selection.
Well, Your Honor, I guess the district court here used that standard of Omron and of the Illinois case Boatwright and said requires interpretation of the clause. And the other side has just conceded.
That's just wrong.
Well, Your Honor, but again, at the end of the day, Your Honor, it still has to be something that deals with this contract, right? In other words, at the end of the day, no matter how broad the language is, it's linked to this contract.
It says any dispute that arises out of our contractual relationship or our relationship. In fact, you gave an example, your hypothetical case of where this form selection clause would apply was arising out of our relationship.
Right.
Relationship. Well, so what would an Illinois court do with that? It wouldn't say, well, you have to have a contract.
No, Your Honor. I think that's a much so broader.
So the question is, what is that form selection clause in Omron? And you don't even know what it is, right? So you can't tell us it's the same as this clause. You don't know what it said.
Your Honor, again, my recollection is that it was
isn't really good enough, right?
Well, Your Honor, again, at the end of the day, though,
obviously depends critically on the specific wording of the form selection clause.
I'll grant you that, Your Honor. I think that's absolutely right.
And if the clause in Omron wasn't as broad as this clause, then I don't see what work Omron does for you.
I agree. But my point is, at the end of the day, this clause is about this contract. It's a broad clause, but at the end of the day, it's about things that relate to this contract.
It's not necessarily about the meaning or interpretation of the contract or a contract dispute. You can have a dispute arising out of a contract that doesn't require you to interpret the contract. And there's nothing in Illinois law to suggest that such a form selection clause is somehow improper.
Well, Your Honor, the other side certainly has never suggested any Illinois case that says that related to, that this particular language here.
There's never been a clause like this as far as I know, right? Why would you expect Illinois law about interpreting this clause?
No, Your Honor, with all respect, I think these kinds of clauses, they use different...
Don't give me these kind of clauses. Well, they're all worded differently.
You're absolutely right.
You haven't pointed to a single case which used this related to the agreement language.
Your Honor, the point is, though, it is this agreement, and this agreement is not relevant to the Delaware fiduciary duty of loyalty claim because it's not a creature of contract. If there are no further questions,
thank you. Well, thank you very much to both sides.